The maidens were gone from in front of Rand's doors. The doors themselves were gone along with most of the wall, and a jagged hole nearly as big gaped in the wall opposite. She could see into his apartments clearly, despite the dust, into devastation. Massive piles of rubble lay everywhere, and above, the ceiling yawned open to the sky. Snow swirled down onto flames dancing among the rubble. One of the massive blackwood posts of his bed stuck burning out of shattered stone, and she realized she could see all the way outside to the step towers veiled by the snowfall. It was as if a huge hammer had smashed into the Sun Palace. And had they been in there, instead of going to see Cadswain? Min shivered.
What?
She began unsteadily, then abandoned the useless question. Any fool would see what had happened.
Who?
She asked instead. Covered in dust, hair every which way, and with tears in their coats, the two men looked as if they'd been rolled along the corridor, and perhaps they had. She thought they were all a good 10 paces farther from the doors than she remembered. From where the doors had been. In the distance, anxious shouts rose, echoing along the halls. Neither man answered her.
"Can I trust you more?"
Rand asked. Fedwin met his gaze openly.
"With your life, my Lord Dragon," he said simply.
"That's what I am trusting you with," Rand said.
His fingers brushed her cheek, and then he stood abruptly. "Guard her with your life, Moore." Hard as steel, his voice. Grim as death.
"If they're still in the palace, they'll feel you try to make a gateway and strike before you can finish. Don't channel at all unless you must, but be ready. Take her down to the servants' quarters, and kill anyone or anything that tries to get to her. Anyone!"
With a last look down at her, oh, light, any other time she would have thought she could die happily seeing that look in his eyes. He went running, away from the ruination, away from her. Whoever had tried to kill him would be hunting for him. Moore patted her on the arm with a dusty hand and gave her a boyish grin.
"Don't worry, Min. I'll take care of you."
But who was going to take care of Rand?
"Can I trust you?" he had asked this boy who had been one of the first to come asking to learn.
Light. Who would make him safe?
Rounding a corner, Rand stopped with a hand against one wall to seize the source. A fool thing, not wanting Min to see him stagger when someone tried to kill him. But there it was. Not just any someone, a man, Demondred, or perhaps Osmodian, come back at last. Maybe both. There had been an oddity, as if the weaving came from different directions. He had felt the channeling too late to do anything. He would have died in his rooms. He was ready to die. But not Min, no. Not Min. Elaine was better off, turning against him. Light she was. He seized the source, and Sidene flooded him with molten cold and freezing heat, with life and sweetness, filth and death. His stomach twisted, and the hallway in front of him doubled itself. For an instant he thought he saw a face. Not with his eyes, in his head. A man, shimmering and unrecognizable, gone. He floated in the void, empty and full of the power. "You won't win," he told Luz Theron. "If I die, I'll die me."
"I should have sent Ilyena away," Luz Theron whispered back. "She would have lived."
Pushing the voice away as he pushed himself from the wall, Rand slipped along the palace corridors with all the stealth he could muster, stepping lightly, gliding close to tapestry-hung walls, around gold-worked chests and gilded cabinets bearing fragile golden porcelains and ivory statuettes. His eyes searched for his attackers. They would not be satisfied short of finding his body, but they would be very careful in approaching his rooms in case he had survived by some Tavirin swirl of fate. They would wait to see whether he stirred. In the void, he was as near one with the power as any man could live through. In the void, as with a sword, he was one with his surroundings. Frantic shouts and clamor rose in every direction, some screaming to know what had happened, others crying that the dragon reborn had gone mad. The bundle of frustration in his head that was Elana provided one small comfort. She was out of the palace, as she had been all morning, maybe even outside the city walls. He wished Min was, too. Sometimes he saw men and women down one hallway or another, black liveried servants mainly, running, falling down, and scrambling up to run again. They did not see him. With the power in him, he could hear every whisper, including the whisper of soft boots running, light-footed. Backing against the wall beside a long table topped with porcelain, he quickly wove fire and air around himself, and held very still, wrapped in folded light. Maidens appeared, a stream of them, veiled, and ran by without seeing him, toward his apartments. He could not let them accompany him. He had promised, but to let them fight, not to lead them to slaughter. When he found Demondred and Asmodian, all the maidens could do was die. And he already had 5 names to learn and add to his list. Sumara of the Bent Peak Darain was already there. A promise he had to make, a promise he had to keep. For that promise alone, he deserved to die.
"Eagles and women can only be kept safe in cages," Luz Theron said, as though quoting, then abruptly began weeping as the last of the maidens vanished.
Rand moved on, sweeping back and forth through the palace in arcs that slowly moved away from his apartments. Folded light used very little of the power, so little no man could have felt the use of Sidene unless right on top of it. And he used it whenever anyone seemed about to see him. His attackers had not struck at his rooms on the chance he would be there. They had eyes and ears in the palace. Maybe it had been Tavirin work that pulled him out of the apartments, if a Tavirin could work on himself, and maybe just happenstance. But perhaps his tugging at the pattern could bring his attackers within his grasp while they thought him dead or injured. Luz Theron chuckled at the thought. Rand could almost feel the man rubbing his hands in anticipation. 3 more times he had to hide behind the power as veiled maidens rushed by, and once when he saw Kedswain sweeping along the corridor ahead with no fewer than 6 Aes Sedai at her heels, and not one other that he recognized besides her. They seemed to be hunting. He was not afraid of the gray-haired sister precisely. No, of course not afraid. But he waited until she and her friends were well out of sight before letting his concealing weave go. Luz Theron did not chuckle over Kedswain. He was deathly silent until she was gone. Rand stepped away from the wall. A door opened right beside him, and Ailill peeked out. He had not known he was near her rooms. Behind her shoulder stood a dark woman with fat golden rings in her ears, and a medallion-filled golden chain running across her left cheek to her nose ring. Shallan, windfinder to Harin Din Togara, the Athaan Mier ambassador, who had moved into the palace with her retinue almost as Mirana informed him of the agreement, and meeting with a woman who might want him dead. Their eyes popped at the sight of him. He was as gentle as he could be, but he had to be quick. A few moments after the door opened, he was tucking a somewhat rumpled Ailill beneath her bed alongside Shallan. Perhaps they were not part of what was happening. Perhaps. Safe was better than sorry. Glaring at him above mouths wadded full of Ailill's scarves, the 2 women writhed against the torn strips of bedsheet he had used to bind their wrists and ankles. The shield he had tied off on Shallan would hold her for a day or two before the knot unraveled, but someone would find them and cut their other bonds before too much longer. Worrying about that shield, he opened the door enough to check the hallway and hurried out along the empty corridor. He could not have left the Windfinder free to channel, but shielding a woman was not a matter of dribbles of the power. If one of his attackers had been close enough... But he saw no one down any of the crossing corridors either. 50 paces beyond Ailill's rooms, the corridor opened into a square-railed balcony of blue marble, with broad stairs at either end, fronting a square chamber with a high vaulted ceiling, and the same sort of balcony at the other side. Tapestries 10 paces long hung along the walls, birds soaring to the skies in rigid patterns. Below, Dashiva stood looking about, licking his lips uncertainly. Gedwin and Rochaid were with him. Luz Theron chittered of killing.
"Telling you I felt nothing," Gedwin was saying. "He's dead!"
And Dashiva saw Rand at the head of the stairs. The only warning he had was the sudden snarl that contorted Dashiva's face. Dashiva channeled, and with no time to think, Rand wove, as so often he did not know what. Something dredged from Luz Theron's memories. He was not even sure he created the weave entirely himself, or whether Luz Theron snatched at Sidene. Air and fire and earth woven around himself just so. The fire that leaped from Dashiva erupted, shattering marble, flinging Rand back down the hallway, bounding and rolling in his cocoon. That barrier would keep out anything short of balefire, including air to breathe. Rand released it panting, scraping along the floor, with the crash of the explosions still ringing in the air, dust still hanging and bits of broken marble tumbling. As much as for breath, though, he let it go because what could keep the power out kept it in. Before he stopped sliding, he channeled fire and air, but woven much differently than for folded light. Thin red wires leaped from his left hand, fanning out as they sliced through the intervening stone toward where Dushiva and the others had been standing. From his left sped balls of flame, fire woven with air, faster than he could count, and they burned through the stone before exploding in that chamber. One continuous, deafening roar made the palace tremble. Dust that had fallen rose up again, and pieces of stone bounced. Almost immediately, though, he was up and running, back past Ailill's apartments. The man who struck and stayed in one spot was asking to die. He was ready to die, but not yet. Snarling soundlessly, he sped down another hall, descended narrow servants' stairs, and came out on the floor below. He took care, making his way back to where he had seen Dushiva, deadly weaves ready to fling at so much as a glimpse.
"I should have killed them all in the beginning," Luz Theron panted. "I should have killed them all."
Rand let him rage. The large chamber seemed to have been washed in fire. Only charred fragments, licked by flames, remained of the tapestries, and great gouges of pace across had been burned into the floor and walls. The stairs Rand had been about to descend ended in a 10-foot gap halfway down. Of the three men, there was no sign. They would not have been consumed completely. Something would have remained. A servant in a black coat cautiously poked his head from a tiny door beside the stairs on the other side of the chamber. His eyes fell on Rand and rolled up in his head, and he fell forward in a heap. Another servant peeped out of a corridor, then gathered her skirts and raced back the way she had come, shrieking at the top of her lungs that the dragon reborn was killing everyone in the palace. Rand slipped out of the chamber, grimacing. He was very good at frightening people who could not harm him. Very good at destroying.
"To destroy or be destroyed," Luz Theron laughed. "When that's your choice, is there a difference?"
Somewhere in the palace, a man channeled enough of the power to make a gateway. Dushiva and the others fleeing were wanting him to think that. He walked the corridors of the palace, no longer bothering to hide. Everyone else seemed to be. The few servants he saw fled screaming. Corridor after corridor he hunted, filled near to bursting with Sidene, full of fire and ice trying to annihilate him as surely as Dushiva had, full of the taint worming its way into his soul. He had no need of Luz Theron's ragged laughter and ravings to be filled with the desire to kill. A glimpse of a black coat ahead, and his hand shot up, fire streaking, exploding, tearing away the corner where the two hallways met. Rand let the weave subside, but did not let go. Had he killed him?
"My lord dragon!"
a voice shouted from beyond the torn stonework.
"It's me! Narishma! And Flynn!"
"I didn't recognize you,"
Rand lied.
"Come here."
"I think maybe your blood's hot,"
Flynn's voice called.
"I think maybe we should wait for everybody to cool down."
"Yes,"
Rand said slowly. Had he really tried to kill Narishma? He did not think he could claim the excuse of Luz Theron.
"Yes, that might be best. For a little while longer."
There was no answer. Did he hear boots retreating? He forced his hands down and turned another way. He searched through the palace for hours without finding a sign of Dushiva or the others. The corridors and great halls, even the kitchens, were empty of people. He found nothing and learned nothing. No, he realized that he had learned one thing. Trust was a knife, and the hilt was as sharp as the blade. Then he found pain.
The small, stone-walled room was deep below the Sun Palace and warm despite the lack of a fireplace, but Min felt cold. Three gilded lamps on the tiny wooden table gave more than enough light. Rand had said that from there he could get her away even if someone tried to root the palace out of the ground. He had not sounded as if he were joking. Holding the crown of Ilian on her lap, she watched Rand. Watched Rand watching Fedwin. Her hands tightened on the crown, and loosened immediately at the stabs of those small swords hidden among the laurel leaves. Strange that the crown and scepter should have survived when the dragon throne itself was a pile of gilded splinters buried in rubble. A large leather scrip beside her chair with Rand's sword belt and scabbarded sword resting against it held what else he had been able to salvage. Strange choices for the most part in her estimation. "You brainless looby," she thought. "Not thinking about what's right in front of you won't make it go away." Rand sat cross-legged on the bare stone floor, still covered in dust and scratches, his coat torn. His face might have been carved. He seemed to watch Fedwin without blinking. The boy was sitting on the floor, too, his legs sprawled out, tongue caught between his teeth. Fedwin was concentrating on making a tower out of blocks of wood. Min swallowed hard. She could still remember the horror when she realized the boy guarding her now had the mind of a small child. The sadness remained, too. Liked he was only a boy. It was not right. But she hoped Rand still had him shielded. It had not been easy, talking Fedwin into playing with those wooden blocks instead of pulling stones out of the walls, with the power to make a big tower to keep you safe in. And then she had sat guarding him until Rand came. Oh, Light, she wanted to cry. For Rand even more than Fedwin.
"You hide yourself in the depths, it appears."
The deep voice was not finished speaking from the doorway before Rand was on his feet, facing Mazrim Taim. As usual, the hook-nosed man wore a black coat with blue and gold dragons spiraling up the arms. Unlike the other Ashaman, he had neither sword nor dragon on his high collar. His dark face wore nearly as little expression as Rand's. Now, staring at Taim, Rand seemed to be gritting his teeth. Min surreptitiously eased a knife in her coat sleeve. As many images and auras danced around one as the other, but it was not a viewing that made her suddenly wary. She had seen a man trying to decide whether to kill another before, and she was seeing it again.
"You come here holding Saidin, Taim?" Rand said, much too softly.
Taim spread his hands, and Rand said, "That's better." But he did not relax.
"It was just that I thought I might be stabbed by accident," Taim said, "making my way here through corridors packed with those Aiel women. They seem agitated."
His eyes never left Rand, but Min was sure he had noticed her touching her knife.
"Understandably, of course," he went on smoothly. "I cannot express my joy at finding you alive after seeing what I did above. I came to report deserters. Normally I wouldn't have bothered, but these are Gedwin, Rochade, Torval, and Kisman. It seems they were malcontented over events in Altara, but I never thought they would go this far. I haven't seen any of the men I left with you."
For an instant his gaze flickered to Fedwin, for no more than an instant.
"There were other casualties? I will take this one with me if you wish." "I told them to stay out of sight," Rand said in a harsh voice. "And I'll take care of Fedwin. Fedwin Moore, Taim. Not this one."
He actually backed to the small table to pick up the silver cup sitting among the lamps. Min's breath caught.
"The wisdom in my village could cure anything," Rand said as he knelt beside Fedwin.
Somehow he managed to smile at the boy without taking his eyes from Taim. Fedwin smiled back happily and tried to take the cup, but Rand held it for him to drink.
"She knows more about herbs than anybody I've ever met. I learned a little from her. Which are safe, which not."
Fedwin sighed as Rand took the cup away and held the boy to his chest.
"Sleep, Fedwin," Rand murmured.
It did seem that the boy was going to sleep. His eyes closed, his chest rose and fell more slowly, slower, until it stopped. The smile never left his lips.
"A little something in the wine," Rand said softly as he laid Fedwin down.
Min's eyes burned, but she would not cry. She would not.
"You are harder than I thought," Taim muttered.
Rand smiled at him, a hard, feral smile.
"Add Korlan Dashiva to your list of deserters, Taim. Next time I visit the Black Tower, I expect to see his head on your traitor's tree." "Dashiva?"
Taim snarled, his eyes widening in surprise.
It will be as you say. When next you visit the Black Tower?
That quickly he recovered himself, all polished stone and poise once more. How she wished she could read her viewings of him.
Return to the Black Tower and don't come here again.
Standing, Rand faced the other man over Fedwin's body.
I may be moving about for a while.
Taim's bow was minuscule.
As you command.
As the door closed behind him, Min let out a long breath.
No point wasting time and no time to waste,
Rand muttered. Kneeling in front of her, he took the crown and slipped it into the scrip with the other things.
Min, I thought I was the whole pack of hounds chasing down one wolf after another, but it seems I'm the wolf.
Burn you, she breathed. Tangling both hands in his hair, she stared into his eyes. Now blue, now gray, a morning sky just at sunrise, and dry.
You can cry, Randall Thor. You won't melt if you cry. I don't have time for tears either, Min, he said gently. Sometimes the hounds catch the wolf and wish they hadn't. Sometimes he turns on them or waits in ambush. But first the wolf has to run.
When do we go? She asked. She did not let go of his hair. She was never going to let go of him. Never.
Chapter 30. Beginnings. Holding his fur-lined cloak close with one hand, Perrin let Steyr walk at the bay's own pace. The mid-morning sun gave no warmth, and the rutted snow on the road leading into Abela made poor footing. He and his dozen companions shared the way with only two lumbering ox-carts and a handful of farm folk in plain dark woolens. They all trudged along with heads down, clutching at hat or cap whenever a gust rose, but otherwise concentrating on the ground beneath their shoes. Behind him he heard Niald make a ribald joke in a low voice. Grady grunted in reply, and Balwer sniffed bristly. None of the three seemed at all affected by what they had seen and heard this past month since crossing the border into Amadicia, or by what lay ahead. Edara was sharply beating Masuri for letting her hood slip. Edara and Corella both wore their shawls wrapped around their heads and shoulders in addition to cloaks, but even after admitting the necessity to ride, they had refused to change out of their bulky skirts, so their dark, stockinged legs were bared above the knee. The cold did not seem to bother them in the least, just the strangeness of snow. Corella began quietly advising Seonid as to what would happen if she did not keep her face hidden. Of course, if she let her face be seen too soon, a dose of the strap would be the least she had to fear, as she and the Wise One knew well. Perrin did not have to look back to know the sisters' three warders, bringing up the rear in ordinary cloaks, were men expecting the need at any moment to outsword and carve a way clear. They had been that way since leaving the camp at dawn. He ran a gloved thumb along the axe hanging at his belt, then regathered his own cloak just before a sudden gust could make it billow. If this went badly, the warders might be right. Off to the left, short of where the road crossed a wooden bridge over a frozen stream that twisted along the town's edge, charred timbers thrust out of the snow atop a large square stone platform, with drifts piled around the bottom. Slow to proclaim allegiance to the Dragon Reborn, the local lord had been lucky merely to be flogged and fined all that he possessed. A knot of men, standing at the bridge, watched the mounted party approaching. Perrin saw no sign of helmets or armor, but every man clutched spear or crossbow almost as hard as he did his cloak. They did not talk to one another. They just watched, the mist of their breath curling before their faces. There were other guards bunched all around the town, at every road leading out, at every space between two buildings. This was the Prophet's country, but the White Cloaks and King Aelron's army still held large parts of it. "I was right not to bring her," he muttered. "But I'll pay for it anyway." "Of course you'll pay," Elias snorted. For a man who had spent most of the last 15 years afoot, he handled his mouse-colored gelding well. He had acquired a cloak lined with black fox, dicing with Galen. Aram, riding on Perrin's other shoulder, eyed Elias darkly, but the bearded man ignored him. They did not get on well. "A man always pays, sooner or later, with any woman, whether he owes or not. But I was right, wasn't I?" Perrin nodded. Grudgingly. It still did not seem right taking advice about his wife from another man, even circumspectly, obliquely, Yet it did seem to be working. Of course, raising his voice to Fael was as hard as not raising it to Berylaine, but he had managed the last quite often, and the first several times. He had followed Eliza's advice to the letter. Well, most of it. As well as he could. That spiky scent of jealousy still flared at the sight of Berylaine. Yet, on the other hand, the hurt smell had vanished as they made their slow way south. Still, he was uneasy. When he firmly told her she was not coming with him this morning, she had not raised a single word of protest. She even smelled pleased. Among other things, including startled. And how could she be pleased and angry at the same time? Not a scrap of it had showed on her face, but his nose never lied. Somehow it seemed that the more he learned about women, the less he knew. The bridge guards frowned and fingered their weapons as Stair's hooves thudded hollowly onto the wooden planking. They were the usual odd mix that followed the prophet. Dirty-faced fellows in silk coats too big for them, scar-faced street toughs and pink-cheeked apprentices, former merchants and craftsmen, who looked as if they had slept in their once fine woolens for months. Their weapons appeared well cared for, though. Some of the men had a fever in their eyes. The rest wore guarded, wooden faces. Along with unwashed, they smelled eager, anxious, fervent, afraid, all jumbled together. They made no move to bar passage, just watched, hardly blinking. By what Perrin had heard, all sorts, from ladies in silks to beggars in rags, came to the prophet, hoping that submitting to him in person might gain added blessings. Or maybe added protection. That was why he had come this way, with only a handful of companions. He would frighten Massima if he had to, if Massima could be frightened. But it had seemed better to try reaching the man without fighting a battle. He could feel the guard's eyes on his back until he and the others were all across the short bridge and onto the paved streets of Abela. When that pressure left, though, it brought no sense of relief. Abela was a goodly-sized town with several tall watchtowers and many buildings rising four stories, every last one roofed in slate. Here and there, mounded stone and timbers filled the gap between two structures where an inn or some merchant's house had been pulled down. The prophet disapproved of wealth gained by trade as much as he did carousing, or what his followers called lewd behavior. He disapproved of a great many things and made his feelings known with sharp examples. The streets were jammed with people, but Perrin and his companions were the only ones on horseback. The snow had long since been trampled to half-frozen, ankle-deep mush. Plenty of ox-carts made their slow way through the throng, but very few wagons and not a single carriage. Except for those wearing worn cast-offs or possibly stolen clothes, everyone wore drab woolens. Most people hurried, but like the folk on the road, with heads down. Those who did not hurry were straggling groups of men carrying weapons. In the streets, the smell was mainly dirt and fear. It made Perrin's hackles rise. At least if it came to that, getting out of town with no wall would not prove harder than getting in.
"My lord,"
Balwer murmured, as they came abreast of one of those heaps of rubble. He barely waited for Perrin's nod before turning his hammer-nosed mount aside, and making his way in another direction, hunched in his saddle, with his brown cloak held tight around him. Perrin had no worries about the dried-up little man going off alone, even here. For a secretary, he managed to learn a surprising amount on these forays of his. He seemed to know what he was about. Dismissing Balwer from his thoughts, Perrin set to what he was there about. It took only one question, put to a lanky young man with an ecstatic light on his face to learn where the prophet was staying, and three more to other folk in the streets to find the merchant's house, four stories of gray stone with white marble moldings and window frames. Massima disapproved of grubbing for money, but he was willing to accept accommodations from those who did. On the other hand, Balwer said, he had slept in a leaky farmhouse as often, and been as satisfied. Massima drank only water, and wherever he went, he hired a poor widow, and ate the food she prepared, fair or foul, without complaint. The man had made too many widows for that charity to count far with Perrin. The throng that packed the streets elsewhere was absent in front of the tall house, yet the number of armed guards, like those at the bridge, almost made up for it. They stared at Perrin sullenly, those who did not sneer insolently. The two Aes Sedai kept their faces hidden in deep hoods and their heads down, white breath rising from the cowls like steam. From the corner of his eye, Perrin saw Elias thumbing the hilt of his long knife. It was hard not to stroke his axe.
I've come with a message for the Prophet from the Dragon Reborn, he announced. When none of the men moved, he added, My name is Perrin Ebarra. The Prophet knows me. Balwer had cautioned him about the dangers of using Massima's name, or calling Rand anything but the Lord Dragon Reborn. He was not there to start a riot. The claim of knowing Massima seemed to put a spark into the guards. Several exchanged wide-eyed looks, and one went running inside. The rest stared at him as if he were a gleeman. In a few moments, a woman came to the door. Handsome, with white at her temples, in a high-necked dress of blue wool that was fine, if unadorned, she might have been the merchant herself. Massima did not throw those who offered him hospitality into the streets, but their servants or farmhands usually ended up with one of the bands, spreading the glories of the Lord Dragon. If you will come with me, Master Ebarra, the woman said calmly, you and your friends, I will take you to the Prophet of the Lord Dragon. May the light illumine his name. Calm she might sound, but terror filled her scent. Telling Nield and the warders to watch the horses until they returned, Perrin followed her inside with the others. The interior was dark, with few lamps lit, and not much warmer than outside. Even the wise ones seemed subdued. They did not smell afraid, but almost as close to it as the Aes Sedai, and Grady and Elias smelled of wariness, of raised hackles and ears laid back. Strangely, Aram's scent was eager. Perrin hoped the man did not try to draw that sword on his back. The large carpeted room the woman led them to, with fires blazing on hearths at either end, might have been a general's study, every table and half the chairs covered with maps and papers, and warm enough that Perrin tossed his cloak back and regretted wearing two shirts under his coat. But it was Massima standing in the middle of the room who drew his eyes immediately, like iron filings to a lodestone, a dark, scowling man with a shaven head and a pale triangular scar on one cheek, in a wrinkled gray coat and scuffed boots. His deep-set eyes burned with a black fire, and his scent, the only name Perrin could give that smell, steel-hard and blade-sharp and quivering with wild intensity, was madness. And Rand thought he could put a leash on this? So it is you, Massima growled. I did not think you would dare show your face. I know what you've been up to. Hari told me more than a week ago, and I have kept myself informed. A man shifted in a corner of the room, a narrow-eyed fellow, with a thrusting nose, and Perrin upbraided himself for not noticing him before. Hari's green silk coat was much finer than what he had worn when he denied collecting ears. The fellow rubbed his hands together and grinned at Perrin viciously, but he kept silent as Massima went on. The Prophet's voice grew hotter by the word, not with anger, but as though he meant to burn every syllable deep into Perrin's flesh. I know about you murdering men who have come to the Lord Dragon. I know about you trying to carve out your own kingdom. Yes, I know about Manetherin. About your ambition, your greed for glory. You have turned your back on... Suddenly Massima's eyes bulged, and for the first time anger flamed in his scent. Hari made a strangled sound and tried to back through the wall. Siona de Masuri had lowered their hoods and stood with bare faces, calm and cool, and plainly Aes Sedai to anyone who knew the look. Perrin wondered whether they held the power. He would have wagered that the wise ones did. Idara and Karela were quietly watching every direction at once, and smooth faces or no, if he had ever seen anyone ready to fight, it was them. For that matter, Grady wore readiness like his black coat. Maybe he held the power, too. Elias was leaning against the wall beside the open doors, outwardly as composed as the sisters, but he smelled ready to bite. And Aram stood gazing at Massima with his mouth hanging open. Light. So that is true, too, Massima snapped, spittle flying from his lips. With filthy rumors spreading against the holy name of the Lord Dragon, you dare to ride with these... They've sworn fealty to the Lord Dragon, Massima, Perrin cut in. They serve him. Do you? He sent me to stop the killing, and to bring you to him. No one was offering him a chair, so he pushed a stack of papers from one and sat. He wished the rest would sit, too. Shouting seemed harder when you were sitting down. Ari goggled at him, and Massima was practically shaking, because he had taken a chair without being asked. Oh? Yes. I have given up the names of men, Massima said coldly. I am simply the prophet of the Lord Dragon. May the light illumine him, and the world come to kneel before him. By his tone, the world and the light would regret failure equally. There is much to do here yet. Great works. All must obey when the Lord Dragon calls. But in winter, travel is always slow. A delay of a few weeks will make little difference.
I can have you in Kyrian today, Perrin said. Once the Lord Dragon has spoken to you, you can return the same way and be back here in a few days. If Rand let him return. Massima actually recoiled. Baring his teeth, he glared at the Aes Sedai.
Some contrivance of the power. I will not be touched with the power. It is blasphemy for mortals to touch it.
Perrin came close to gaping.
The dragon reborn channels, man. The blessed Lord Dragon is not as other men, Ibarra.
Massima snarled.
He is the light made flesh. I will obey his summons, but I will not be touched by the filth these women do.
Slumping back in the chair, Perrin sighed. If the man was this bad over Aes Sedai, how would he be when he learned that Grady and Neild could channel? For a moment, he considered simply knocking Massima over the head. And men were passing by in the corridor, pausing to glance in before hurrying on. All it took was one of them raising a shout, and Abela could become a slaughterhouse.
Then we ride, prophet, he said sourly.
Light, Rand had said to keep this secret until Massima stood in front of him. How to manage that, riding all the way to Kyrian.
But no delays. The Lord Dragon is very anxious to talk with you.
I am anxious to speak with the Lord Dragon. May his name be blessed by the light.
His eyes flickered toward the two Aes Sedai. He tried to hide it, actually smiling at Perrin. But he smelled grim.
I am very anxious indeed.
Would my lady like me to ask one of the handlers to bring her a hawk? Maegdin asked. One of Aleandra's four hawk handlers, all men as lean as their birds, urged a sleek duck hawk wearing a feathered hood onto his heavy gauntlet from the wooden stand in front of his saddle, and lifted the gray bird toward her. The falcon, with its blue-tipped wings, was on Aleandra's green-gloved wrist. That bird was reserved to her, unfortunately. Aleandra knew her place as a vassal, but Fael understood not wanting to relinquish a favorite bird. She merely shook her head, and Maegdin bowed in her saddle and moved her roan mare away from Swallow, far enough not to intrude, but close enough to be at hand without Fael raising her voice. The dignified golden-haired woman had proved to be every bit as good a lady's maid as Fael had hoped, knowledgeable, capable. At least she had once she learned that whatever their relative positions with their former mistress, Linny was first among Fael's serving women, and willing to use her authority. Surprisingly, that had actually taken an episode with a switch, but Fael pretended not to know. Only an utter fool embarrassed her servants. There was still the matter of Maegdin and Tullinvor, of course. She was certain Maegdin had begun sharing his bed, and if she found proof, they would marry if she had to turn Linny loose on both of them. Still, that was a small matter, and could not spoil her morning. Hawking had been Aleandra's idea, but Fael had not objected to a ride through this sparse forest, where snow made a rolling blanket over everything and lay thick and white on bare branches. The green of the trees that still held their leaves seemed sharper. The air was crisp, and it smelled new and fresh. Bane and Chiad had insisted on accompanying her, but they squatted nearby, Shufa wrapped around their heads, watching her with disgruntled expressions. Sulin had wanted to come with all of the maidens, but with 100 stories of Aiel depredations floating everywhere, the sight of an Aiel was enough to send most people in Amadisia running or reaching for a sword. There must be some truth in those tales, or so many would not know an Aiel, though the light alone knew who they were or where they had come from. Yet even Sulin agreed that whoever they were, they had moved on east, perhaps into Altara. In any case, this close to Abela, 20 of Aleandra's soldiers and as many Maenar winged guards proved sufficient escort. The streamers on their lances, red or green, lifted like ribbons when the breeze stirred. Berylaine's presence was the only blight. Though watching the woman shiver in her fur-trimmed red cloak, thick enough for two blankets, was certainly amusing. Mayenne did not have a real winter. This was like the last days of autumn. In Saldaya, the heart of winter could freeze exposed flesh hard as wood. Fayil took a deep breath. She felt like laughing. By some miracle, her husband, her beloved wolf, had begun behaving as he should. Instead of shouting at Berylaine or running from her, Perrin now tolerated the jade's blandishments, plainly tolerated them the way he would a child playing around his knees. And best of all, there was no longer any need to tamp down her anger when she wanted to let it loose. When she shouted, he shouted back. She knew he was not Saldaean, but it had been so hard, thinking in her heart of hearts that he believed her too weak to stand up to him. A few nights ago at supper, she'd almost pointed out to him that Berylaine was going to fall out of her dress if she leaned over the table any further. Well, she was not going to go that far, not with Berylaine. The trull still thought she could win him. And that very morning he had been commanding, quietly brooking no argument, the sort of man a woman knew she had to be strong to deserve, to equal. Of course she would have to nip him over that. A commanding man was wonderful, so long as he did not come to believe he could always command. Laugh? She could have sung. Magden, I think after all I will... Magden was there immediately with an inquiring smile, but Fayil trailed off at the sight of three riders ahead of her, ploughing through the snow as fast as they could push their horses. At least there are plenty of hares, my lady, Aleandra said, walking her tall white gelding up beside Swallow. But I had hoped... Who are they? Her falcon shifted on her thick glove, the bells on its jesses jingling. Why, it looks like some of your people, my lady. Fayil nodded grimly. She recognized them, too. Perleon, Arala, and Lassile. But what were they doing here? The three drew rein before her, their horses panting steam. Perleon looked as wide-eyed as his dapple. Lassile, her pale face nearly hidden in the deep cowl of her cloak, was swallowing anxiously, and Arala's dark face seemed gray. "My lady," Perleon said urgently, "dire news. The prophet Massima has been meeting with the Shanchan." "The Shanchan?" Aleandra exclaimed. "Surely he cannot believe they will come to the Lord Dragon." "It might be simpler," Berylaine said, heeling her too showy white mare up on Aleandra's other side. Without Perrin about for her to try to impress, her dark blue riding dress was cut quite modestly, with a neck up under her chin. She still shivered. "Massima dislikes Aes Sedai, and the Shanchan keep women who can channel as prisoners." Fayil clicked her tongue in vexation. Dire news indeed, if true.